This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long in studio. Before we start Sports Talk, I'm going to throw it to Ian Ozan, who has a weather bulletin for us.
Yeah, Ian. Mike, the National Weather Service just came in with a new flash flood warning, or really an extension of that warning. Now in effect until 7:15 for New Orleans and St. Bernard Parish, especially New Orleans East, Araby, and the Chalmette areas. Some areas seeing as much as 6 inches of rain. Interstate 510, I-10 in New Orleans East, encountering some flash flooding right now. So again, if you don't have to be on the roads, don't do it. But flash flood warning in effect for St. Charles, Jefferson, New Orleans, and St. Bernard till at least 6:30 for most people. But for those of you in New Orleans East into Araby and Chalmette, that warning now extended till 7:15 tonight with even more flooding rains on the way.
Ian, please keep us posted because we know this is drive time back home and it's a busy time as far as being on the streets. So any other bulletins, just let us know and we'll cut right into Sports Talk.
You got it, brother.
Thank you, brother Ian. Charlie, no surprise here. We got a lot of football talk and certainly a lot of draft talk. But Cooper Flagg's announcement today that he was coming out early, I mean, that's no shock. I remember when he first got said that, and he made the comment, I don't know, I'm thinking about playing another year at Duke. I told you, ain't no way on God's green earth he plays another game after he finishes the season for Duke. And you can see the extreme amount of money. Charlie, I bet we've talked to a dozen people, and everyone you ask about Cooper Flagg, everyone said the exact same thing Nick Friedell said. He is a gold chip prospect and a cornerstone of any rebuilding basketball team.
Yeah, it was one of those situations where, we talked about this, Mike. We were going to believe that he was going to go back to Duke when we saw it. Yes, NIL money is great. And all these athletes are getting paid significant, amounts of money, especially these top guys. But professional sports is different, right? And the number one overall pick money in the NBA is different. And another thing that not many people were really considering, like not just getting your first NBA contract, but you're one step closer to the second NBA contract, and that's when you get the real generational wealth. So it made all the sense in the world for him to just be one and done with Duke and enter the NBA where he's going to be the clear-cut number one pick.
Charlie, and we just kind of a blink away, once we finish the NFL draft, it'll be the NBA lottery, and we'll be carrying that and certainly talking about it quite a bit here on the Big 870 WWL over the weekend. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, LSU wins 2 out of 3 against University of Alabama. And, Charlie, you saw when they needed something to happen, especially first two games, Alabama winning the last. But the first two games, when they needed something offensively, they came through. Steven Milam, man,
yes.
The little Duke, he got some pop on the bat. And, man, he broke it open in game one.
And that game one was so gigantic, Mike. Yes, yeah, I know was. That game two, they have a really tight victory where it was contested at the very end. Zach Cowan on the mound, you really never felt like he was going to give up the tying run at that point. But going back to game one specifically, Ashton Larson comes in, pitch hit, three-run shot. But the Milam home run that he hit that gave LSU the lead in that game, and they went on to have a huge run, you know, late in that game to take game one, which was the biggest game of the weekend, in my opinion. I thought it was foul off the bat. He ripped it. And so it was a phenomenal performance in game one where LSU came back from an early deficit. Not the best performance by Cade Anderson, once again, their ace, but they were able to overcome it, pick up a big game one victory, squeak out a game two victory, and then game three, at that point, you had won the series. It's okay, but there were a couple issues on the mound in that that third matchup against Bama. Bama's a good offense. I mean, it is what it is. You took two out of three from a top 15 opponent at home. You basically did what you were supposed to do, and now you have Tennessee coming to the box, and that's going to be really, really, really fascinating to see what happens.
Try to get a ticket for that one. That one's becoming a hot ticket all across the board,
yeah.
And I know they have all kind of things happening this weekend, not only with the draft, but also certainly Jazz Fest and everything else, but that is a hot ticket, because I've had a couple calls about it already, about trying to get some tickets for different people with it, so it's interesting. In that series, there's a hate relationship between LSU baseball and Tennessee baseball.
It's kind of developing into a little mini rivalry, Mike. It's a lot of fun. I mean, listen, Tennessee's kind of the new kid on the block. They won their first national championship last year. They've been great under Coach Vitello. They've had some fantastic seasons where, you know, they haven't won it all, but they won it all this past year. And now, you know, they're good again. They're kind of just like Vitello's, in a sense, very similar to Jay Johnson, where they recruit so well. And they get so much talent into the program every single year, which is why you see them consistently in the top 10 under those two fantastic head coaches.
Yeah, and I always said this about Jay, because I got a good friend of mine who does scouting in Major League Baseball, and he told me, you know, when they hired Jay, he said he is going to be the Steve Spurrier of the SEC, and that, man, you're going to see a lot of offense out of him. He's a great recruiter. He's got a fertile mind. But who's really Steve Spurrier personality-wise? It's that guy at Tennessee.
Yeah, Coach Vitello.
Vitello, he really has become the SEC version in baseball of what we saw Steve Spurrier do in the SEC in football many years ago. When we come back, we'll have on with us Rohit Punnea from Covers.com. And, man, the odds are changing a bit now. And this is no shock. We've talked about it a long time. The Saints aren't going to pick no quarterback at 9. I'm not saying later on. But now you're seeing the odds sort of change a little bit more toward tight end, defensive line. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. And on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line from Covers.com, Rohit Punnea. Rohit, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. How you doing, buddy?
Good, man. Good to be on. Excited for the draft. Excited for the upcoming season.
Yeah, so am I. Man, football season, the blink of an eye, is going to be here. I know it seems long, but it won't be too much longer, so to speak, as the sands go out through the hourglass. Rohit, I'll talk to you about Saints first, because I think once the Derek Carr situation got leaked by his own camp, the betting odds sort of changed. I think a lot of us here felt that no matter what, that unless the Saints had traded up to the first pick to get Cam Ward, which I truly believe they tried to do and just could not come up with a package, they weren't going to pick a quarterback at 9. And now as it gets closer and closer, the odds are starting to change a little bit now, more toward tight end, defensive line. And that would make a lot of sense because of the fact I think most people feel Will Campbell or Ahmad Minbu won't be there when the Saints pick at 9.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a lot of value in looking at those positions because, I mean, we know, like, looking back at what the last 8 first-round picks by Loomis were all either, you know, offensive linemen or defensive linemen. They like to build from the trenches out. And, yeah, I mean, quarterback is an issue, but you never want to overdraft on a quarterback because that can really set a franchise back. It really comes down to really whether or not the Saints brass thinks, you know, someone like Sanders or Dart is worthy of a top 10 pick. You know, maybe they trade down a little bit and get one of those guys. But right now, I mean, there's a lot of reports that those guys, you know, are, you know, would be overdrafted if they were taken top 10. But there's a lot of really good, you know, pass rushers in the draft, a lot of good, you know, players in the trenches that can really help them out immediately.
Rohit, one of the things is that we rarely see a tight end get picked in the top 10. Mm-hmm. Now, we did see Kyle Pitts a few years back. Now, Brock, he escaped the top 10, but, man, did he pay off big for the Raiders because he was – I'm not saying everything they had, but he was a lot of what they had offensively. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on Tyler Warren because – and I think Colston Loveland will follow him very quickly. I don't think Colston's going to have to wait too long to hear his name pass Tyler Warren. But it's one of those type drafts where what you've seen in the past may not convert to what is happening in this year's draft class.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really just comes down to what the offense is going to look like under Moore and how they're going to use those tight ends. Because you guys already have a pretty good tight end in Juwan Johnson. It's about how are they going to use two. And I think it's going to come down to the fact that Tyler Warren, I think if you're just looking at overall talent, is he a top 10 worthy player? Absolutely. Question is, do you want to spend a top 10 pick on a tight end when you have a ton of other positions of need throughout the roster? And I think there's a lot of other positions that, you know, they could use to shore up that would come in over there. As good as Warren is, I just don't think I think it's a bit of an overdraft when you already have someone like Johnson at tight end.
Rohit, looking elsewhere around the NFC South, what's kind of the early buzz about what the Falcons are going to be doing with their 15th overall selection about midway through the first round?
Yeah, I mean, it's looking like defense for the Falcons. I mean, this is a team that, you know, it does make sense maybe to give Penix a little bit of help on the line or something like that. But, I mean, this defense is terrible. I don't think they've really done a ton in the offseason that really make me think that they've shored up that pass rush. I mean, you know, adding, what, a 32-year-old Leonard Floyd, I don't think that moves the needle at all. I don't think adding Morgan Fox moves the needle. And this team desperately, desperately needs pass rush. You're looking at the odds right now, and I think it's about minus 200 for them to take a defensive lineman or an edge player with their first pick. And it makes a lot of sense, too. They're picking at about number 15, middle of the draft, a ton of depth at pass rusher in this year's draft. We've got guys like James Pierce, Mikal Williams, Shamar Stewart, Mike Green, all guys that I think would be phenomenal fits for them in the middle of the first round.
Rohit, one of the teams that have really drafted well over the last 3 years, and we've seen this soft rebuild post-Tom Brady, is with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yes,
and you think how they've been kind of pieced together. A wide receiver might be a nice addition, but I got a feeling if Jahad Campbell is there from Alabama, the linebacker, he just may be the guy they push the button on.
Yeah, no, actually, that's a play I really like for the Bucs where they are at number 19. Because, I mean, they've got good linebackers, but they're getting up there in age. You know, they just re-signed, he's 35 years old, gave a pretty good contract. But they could definitely use some youth at linebacker. Campbell, I think, is a great fit for them. Looks like Walker's going to be gone. Walker's probably a top 10 pick at this stage. But, yeah, I mean, I think linebacker's a great spot for them. I also think cornerback's an interesting spot as well. I think across from Dean, they could really use a shutdown corner. Will Johnson seems to be falling down a little bit because of his lack of long speed. And so I think Will Johnson could be a good spot for them at 19. I also think Jadae Barron would be a great player for them to pick up that would really shore up cornerback. And we know in the modern NFL, you can never have too many corners. And linebackers, you know, that is a position which has been a little bit undervalued lately. So it really comes down to what they see with value. But I do think Campbell would be a great fit there.
Rohit, you brought up Jalen Walker, and it feels like he would be such a good fit for the Saints at pick 9 with this new defense with Brandon Staley. The issue is the team that's right above him, and that is the Carolina Panthers at pick 8. What are your thoughts on what the Carolina Panthers will do? I know we've talked to a couple different Panthers reporters that say, oh, they may not be forced to take defense in round 1, but it feels like they're, just like the Falcons, going to be addressing their defense with their first round pick. One spot ahead of the Saints, and if Jalen Walker's there, and it's kind of hard to see him making it to pick 9.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because the Panthers are a team with so many holes. And yeah, Jalen Walker would make sense. Getting some juice on that defense makes a lot of sense, too. I mean, they signed a lot of guys in free agency, Wharton, Bobby Brown, Morig, but none of those guys are impact players per se. So, I mean, defense makes a lot of sense. Jalen Walker makes a lot of sense. But I got to agree with a lot of those other guys you're talking to, where I think, I wouldn't be surprised if the Panthers maybe even reached a little bit, grabbed one of the top wide receivers. I think most books have plus 500 for the Panthers to draft a wide receiver with their first pick. And, you know, I think there's value in that because we know that they interviewed Teteroa McMillan and Matthew Golden at the combine. We know that, you know, they're going to stick with Bryce Young and they need to get him targets. They need guys that can separate. I think McMillan's, a great receiver, but, maybe they already have kind of a couple of big receivers there. So a guy like Golden that gives speed to them can give them a guy that can get open so that Young's not getting teed off on, I think would make a lot of sense as well. So I think there's some value in looking at the Panthers to go wide receiver with their first pick.
Rohit, last question for you. And I think we all sort of agree that once you get past Cam Ward, it's really a roll of the dice on where the next quarterback is going to get picked. But you may see a team, or teams, plural, try to get back up because you have that fifth-year option on that quarterback. If Shadir would get past Pittsburgh at 21, or Dart gets past the Steelers at 21, of a team trying to get it late in the first round for a shot at either Sanders or Dart.
Absolutely. I think that's definitely much, very much in play. It seems like quarterback is always such a tough position to evaluate when you're on the outside looking at. Seems like every year there's these guys that are being put in mock drafts first round that end up dropping to the second or third round because the actual teams making these decisions don't value the same as the average fan or, the talent evaluators we've got in the media. So it's going to be one of those spots where I think one of those guys is going to drop, either Dart or Sanders, and I think someone's going to make a move into the bottom of the first round to pick them up.
Rohit, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Great conversation. And, man, you can bet on anything today and now. Yeah. Man, that's a lot of cash on draft choices and who's going to pick who and everything else. And one of the hot things I've heard from a friend of mine is that they think that Jacksonville may be somebody to roll a dice, and they pick Jalen Walker from Georgia.
Ooh. I would like that. I think there's so many directions Jacksonville could go in, but I think Walker is just one of those guys that he would be a great fit anywhere.
Yep,
pretty much
agree.
Any team in the league could use an impact pass rusher, and he can also, drop into coverage. He could do a little bit of everything, so he's just such a great athlete, and he was so productive at Georgia too, right? So I think he's a great fit everywhere, but yeah, in Jacksonville, he would definitely add an instant impact.
Rohit, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it, buddy, and we'll get you back on soon.
Thanks, guys. Best of luck.
All right. Rohit Panoe, who does a great job at covers.com. We're going to throw it to Ian Ozan, who has another weather bulletin for us.
Hey there, Mike. That flash flood warning we were talking about earlier now extended to 7:30 for the entirety of the metro area. That's St. Charles, Jefferson, Orleans, and St. Bernard parishes. Worst of the activity right now is over West End, Lakeview, Gentilly, City Park, those areas, extending down into Mid-City and downtown New Orleans. The flash flood warning, by the way, now covers all of Interstate 10 from Clearview through New Orleans East, as well as Interstate 610 and Interstate 510. If you're on surface streets or even the interstates, your best bet right now is just to go home or to stay off the roads completely. But again, flash flood warning now in effect until 7:30 tonight for St. Charles, Jefferson, Orleans, St. Bernard. We're seeing the worst of it over the city of New Orleans right now. It's pushing eastward. The bad news, though, is that we have even more heavy showers over Reserve and LaPlace that are pushing their way eastward. They'll be here in the next hour, hour and a half.
Ian, thanks so much for the update. We really appreciate it. We'll come back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this break.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. We're trying to connect with Les East of Crescent City Sports, talk a little bit about press conference tomorrow for Joe Dumars as he addresses the New Orleans media for the first time, and also certainly the NFL draft, which is coming up this coming Thursday, and we'll have wall-to-wall coverage starting at 4 o'clock. Hoss and Deuce out at the Saints headquarters, and they'll be talking to all the Saints brass from 4 to 6, and then at 6 o'clock, myself along with Bobby J, Steve Geller, Charlie Hanlon, things behind the scenes, we'll have you coverage of round one and probably take you to 11:30 Thursday night, and then again Friday, got two rounds. It'll speed up a little bit, but we'll give you rounds two and three, and then Saturday we'll have you the full brunt from rounds four to round seven. Thursday will be at 504 Golf on Howard Avenue. So if you're in the area, come on by and see us. And again, we'll be giving you our opinions on the selections. And also, you'll hear the draft choices. For the first time, they'll come on WWL Radio and tell you their thoughts. And a lot of them is just a relief I got picked. For some of them, they're so thrilled. But, you know, you go through this process, Charlie, of 3 months, and you say, man, finally, it's over with, and I know where I'm going to be. I sort of know who the coach is, everything else. And it's a flip-flop of the recruiting process. Whereas the player, you have the advantage. You telling the coach where you're going. Now, the coach in the organization is telling you where you have to go to.
Yeah, and you see it with the emotions that some of these players have when they get selected, basically in every round of the draft. You know, it's always an outpour. And so it's always a great time talking with these guys once they get selected, Mike. And, you know, I'll be grabbing all this audio from y'all's interviews with them. And one of my favorite things, every single year that we've done, and it's become a tradition, telling them to give their first hoodat to the Hoodat Nation. And it's always great stuff.
Yeah, some of them are really good at it. It's almost like, man, I'm prepared for this
moment. They're fired up, man.
They get excited about it. And again, man, it changes your life instantly. And now with NIL, yeah, you are getting money in college. But, boy, you're professional now. You got to learn that, you know, they're expecting you to do things at a certain level, and that's just the way it's going to be no matter what. One of the things today is, and we're going to talk to Pete Jenkins about this at 5:20. Pete's going to come on with us, talk about some of the Georgia players, LSU players that he has worked with, and his interpretation of where he thinks they'll play in the NFL. Mykael Williams is a guy. Charlie, you and I have spoken about this before. I had him ranked a lot higher than most people. I thought he would be one of the top 13, 14 selections in the draft. He just is built for the spot. He played through an injury last year with an ankle. And now, 2 weeks after, we had a long discussion on this. Man, I'm hearing everybody else say the exact same thing about Mykael Williams, and we'll get Pete's thoughts also on Mykael, who, man, if you were to kind of carve out a defensive end, he looks like Mykael Williams.
So the one thing that popped up with Mykael is the fact that he played last year with an injury, an ankle injury. And that's why, you know, you didn't see necessarily the pass rush production specifically. Mykael Williams, I think you'd agree with me, Mike. He's got such a high floor as a prospect. Just because you know what he can do in the run game and setting the edge at the defensive end spot, I like him a lot. I don't know if I like him in the top 10 this year. I know that you're higher on him than most people, Mike, that's for sure. Because there's some people that see him, you know, as a borderline first round prospect, if that, right? And, you know, if the Saints decide that they love his potential and they think that they can unlock some extra things with him, the athlete's there. right? Like, Mikael Williams is an impressive, impressive athlete, as you talked about the physical build that he possesses. But, you know, you're just going to have to fall in love with the player to take him at nine.
And what I want to get from Pete is the man, okay? I want him to tell me about the guy. Because he's been out on that grass. He's been the guy to work him out. And I know he catches an earful from Pete every time Pete goes to Georgia. Because Pete, you know, he's not the most soft-spokenest guy around when he gets on players. But, man, Charlie, how good can Georgia recruit? And when you think about it, you know, it's Mikael Williams and Jalen Walker and Malachi Starks. And there probably are three other guys that'll get picked on the defensive side. Man, you got to give Kirby Smart, no matter what you might think about him as a game day coach, how good of a recruiter he is. And they're kind of like Noah's Ark. They got two of all of them. You know, they're too deep. No matter across the board, it's been a remarkable run for Kirby Smart in Georgia in producing all these early round selections, and especially on the defensive side to football.
So, Mike, it's funny you mentioned this when we were interviewing Rohit. Jalen Walker, you know, I haven't really considered him as maybe going fifth overall to Jacksonville. The report came out today from Adam Schefter that they could potentially surprise some people with their selection at pick five.
That pick, it would be Walker. I'm just telling you, Charlie, I hear the hoofbeats that, you know, who knows what Jacksonville's going to do. But Jalen Walker, to me, is a little bit like Will Campbell. You're not only getting the player, you're getting and I always grade up a player when I know about his leadership,
yeah,
about his focus, his attention to detail, that he gets other people around him to look better, and he's a playmaker. That's what Will Campbell does and did at LSU. That's what Jalen Walker is going to do, whoever selects him. He's that type of guy. And you want that guy. Okay, yeah, I want a badass guy on the field. But also I want a guy in the locker room that he can communicate to other players what he expects of them. Because he puts his level way above any fan, any sportscaster, anybody. He puts himself at a much higher level to kind of hit that ceiling as a player. And I see that in Will Campbell. I see that in Jalen Walker. I see that in Ashton Jeanty. I'm going to be honest. He's another guy that's like that. That, listen, I know I can play, but I'm expecting you to do this, and I'm going to tell you why you should do it. There are maybe a handful of those guys every year, five to six, but we're talking about Walker and Campbell and Jeanty. Those are the type of people. And I'll put Cam Ward there too, because I think Cam Ward is one of those guys that when he's going to get in the NFL, man, he ain't going to take no back seat. It ain't going to be no Will Levis stuff. He's going to take charge with the Titans.
So the name that you brought up there as well before Campbell and Walker and Cam Ward, Jeanty. That's who I thought, you know, the quote-unquote surprise pick could be for the Jacksonville Jaguars, is taking Ashton Jeanty at pick number five and sniping, you know, sniping the Raiders, who are, you know, we've been talking about this for months now, Mike, that we expect Vegas to take Jeanty at pick six. But if he's there, because that's kind of the question mark, if he's there, because, you know, with the Jacksonville Jaguars at pick five, I could theoretically see them taking Jeanty. I could see them taking potentially, I don't know, Tyler Warren. Jalen Walker is the new name that's kind of popped up too. It just feels like, you know, some of these top 10 guys are locked in to be top 10 picks. It's just a matter of how it all kind of shapes up and which spots they actually land at.
Charlie, there's really nine guys. The pick 10 for the Bears. Now, there's always, not say always, but there's a good chance that you get an out of alignment pick. But if I'm the Bears, and I see Cam Ward's gone, Travis Hunter's gone, Abdul Carter's gone, Campbell and Mimbu are gone, Jeanty's gone, Jalen Walker's gone, Tyler Warren's off the board. If I'm 10 with the Bears, I give him the card, Mikael Williams.
Yeah, that was your mock, Mike, and I see it. Because he fits the kind of prototype that Dennis Allen would like in a 4-3 defensive end, right? So I could completely see that. If I'm the Bears as well, and this is where you mentioned the top nine, The Bears taking down the Packers in week 18
super
underappreciated for Saints fans, where they hop up to pick 9 because they were at 10 at that point. But now you're in such a good position, Mike, where you're going to get one of those quote unquote blue chip prospects at pick 9. And you feel great about it. It's just a matter of not having to reach for a quarterback with the 9th pick, which I know it's smokescreen season, but it feels like all the buzz is that the Saints are not going to do that, thankfully.
And the offseason has been kind to the Bears. I think they've done a good offseason. I'll be honest with you. Now, again, Ben Johnson's got to work his magic with Caleb Williams to get him to produce and not hold the football as long in the pocket, to be more decisive with a throw. But you see all those pieces of the puzzle they have. Charlie, the Bears are going to be a tough out. If they hit big with their first couple, 3 selections, man, that NFC North with Detroit and Minnesota and Green Bay, and now they've opened the ring. Bears, now you got to walk in it and get the right players. But you talk about a dogfight. That is one of them there. The cage match is on with those 4 teams. If they can come up with a couple of 3 guys that can help them immediately in the lineup. When we come back, we'll finish it off here in hour number 1 of Sports Talk on the Big 870 right after this break. Finishing off here, hour number 1 of Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL. Want to tell everybody at 5:20, the legendary Pete Jenkins will be on with us to talk defensive line play and all. I have 24 of my top 75 defensive linemen. Edge guys, interior combined, 24. That has never happened. This is 40 years for me. Never seen it happen before. We'll get Pete to talk about some of those guys and also the development of young defensive linemen. And at 6:20, the man himself, Ben McDonald, will join Steve and Charlie in talking about LSU baseball and big series coming up this weekend against the Tennessee Volunteers.
I got to double check this. Tennessee, I think, just dropped the weekend series to Kentucky, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
How about that? Right? That's just out of the blue. You know, a lot of these middling SEC teams that are kind of middle of the pack can take down the top any single weekend. And so we'll see what happens with this upcoming weekend series against LSU and Tennessee. I just know all the discourse online between these two fan bases has been very toxic. Oh, my team's better than yours. My team's better than yours. We'll see them prove it on the field this upcoming weekend.
Yeah, it's man, in the SEC, it's a growing hatred for one another in one sport or another. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this news break. Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. I'd like to tell you, along with Charlie Long, at 5:45, we'll have Steve Geller join us for our Bet 365 triple option feature. At 5:20, the legendary Pete Jenkins will be on with us to talk about defensive line play and a couple guys that he basically had some mentorship with at Georgia and also at LSU. And Charlie, is this time of year where you can't believe anybody about anything they tell you?
Smoke screens.
Oh yeah, and so my thing is, man, why go through all that? And you and I had this conversation. When you don't hear something about a player, watch out, because that normally means a lot of people really like them. And Amika Buka fits that mold as a wide receiver for Ohio State, and we've heard so much certainly about Travis Hunter, and I think with Cleveland, that's where he's going to play. He's going to play some secondary, but he really is going to play more receiver than at corner. Tet McMillan, we saw him for the last couple of years just be a dominant player out in the Pac-12 as a big man receiver. He's not the fastest, or maybe he's not the cleanest of route runners. Got great hands. Get up in the air, can make a catch between arms and hands. And, man, he's got some scoot. After he gets going, man, he's a bundle to bring down. And then Matthew Golden, certainly the speedster from University of Texas. And I think he certainly won the offseason. But Amika Buka, every time you watch him play, and how he can get into and out of a cut and a break. So smooth, great hands catcher, just like Tyler Warren. And that's one of the reasons, I'm a big advocate of Tyler. And I know some people think picking him at 9 is too high, but I think he'd be a great fit with the Saints as a tight end and a movement guy. I not only can play him inside, that inline tight end, but I could also flank him outside. He helps my receiving core. He gives me a big man there. Also, he can help my running game. Because of all the early round pick tight ends, he's the best blocker of all of them.
Yep.
And so you have all that, but Abuka, because I think this year he was overshadowed by a cat that you don't see a lot of guys. Alabama had one. Ohio State had one. True freshmen. Those guys look like fifth-year seniors, the way they were smoking people up and down the field. But Abuka is a guy that whoever gets him, you getting a really good football player. Will he be a great player? Probably not. But he'll always be a very good football player, and he will not drop the football. Great hands catcher. I think other than Jack Besh, I think he's got the best hands of any of them in this draft class.
Emeka's underappreciated, Mike, and I know that this draft class has been criticized as far as the receivers go, and I actually do have a question for you about Travis Hunter. I'll save it here in just a second, kind of comparing it to last year and where he would rank with those top three receivers. But Emeka Buka, listen, we both love him. And as I mentioned, underappreciated because he was a little bit in the shadow of Jeremiah Smith, who's going to set the world on fire until he basically makes it to the NFL in a couple of years. But he was fantastic as a freshman, and you kind of compared him to Julio Jones, for those that don't know.
Yep.
As far as Emeka Abuka goes, he's going to go somewhere in the 20s, and whoever takes him is going to get a stud. Maybe, as you mentioned, not necessarily a wide receiver one that's going to be putting up 1,500 yards a season, but a damn good wide receiver too. And so, as I mentioned, I've seen some different mocks that have him falling out of the first round entirely. I just don't see it. And with smokescreen season, as we like to call it, whenever you're not hearing much about one of those top prospects, it's because everybody likes him. I don't see him falling out of the first round. I see him falling out of maybe the top 15 to 20, but once he gets past that point, some team's going to scoop him up and get a really, really good player. Going back to my question, though, Mike, with Travis Hunter playing receiver in all likelihood once he goes to Cleveland, and maybe he'll be used in some dime sets there with the Browns and stuff like that. But with him going to Cleveland and being a primary receiver with the Browns, if you were kind of comparing him to last year's very illustrious wide receiver class where you had Marvin Harrison Jr. and then Malik Nabers and Roma Dunze, how does Travis Hunter, the receiver, stack up with those guys, in your opinion?
He'd be three.
Okay.
I'd have Harrison and Malik Nabers rated ahead of him. But the one specialty he can do the others can't, he can actually play defense for me.
That's true. He's a unicorn,
so,
Mike.
Those other guys, they're not lining up on defense. Travis and everything I've heard about him, his character makeup, he's a guy you're not going to have any issues with. His ego's not going to get involved. He's a guy, he was either one or two ranked player in the country. He goes to Jackson State because of Dion, and then he follows Coach Prime to Colorado. He's thin build, but I noticed on the last time they ran Colorado's Pro Day and I watched it, he's filled out some. He's put some good weight on, and he is such a crafty guy to find a crease to get open downfield, and then once he catches it, you got issues. You got some real issues on your hands because he is one step fast. He puts one step down, and he's fast. For some of these guys, it takes a couple steps. But for him, it's one step. He becomes fast, and he knows how to find the end zone. And throughout his high school, college career, one thing he's done, and it's a rarity for a receiver, he's either faced double coverage or bracket coverage every down. Every down. It's not occasionally. It's every down, because if I'm playing Jackson State or if I'm playing Colorado, man, I'm trying not to have him dominate. So I'm going to rotate coverage to his side of the field, and look the numbers he put up. Just staggering for that type of player and to be that productive when you know that's where Colorado was going to go with the football at times. He's an amazing athlete. I can't compare him really to anybody in the 40 years that I've seen that could actually start at corner and at wide receiver and did it
college. We've been saying it the whole time. He's the best player in this draft. And I know that some people have said different things like Abdul Carter's better or whatever. Mm-hmm. No, Travis Hunter is a unicorn. He is a special, special, special talent. And, you know, because Tennessee has forced themselves to basically taking Cam Ward with the number one overall pick, Cleveland is going to benefit.
Yeah, Jimmy Haslam wants him. Yeah, see what the owner says. That's the guy I want. Okay? It's not a Abdul Carter. Yeah, he's a good player. Man, what? I want Travis Hunter. And that's who you guys are going to pick because I'm the owner of the team. And guess who the Browns are going to do? They're going to pick Travis Hunter. When we come back, we'll have on with us the legendary Pete Jenkins. Join us here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long. And on our Oakwood Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, the legendary Pete Jenkins. Coach, thanks so much for joining us. I always love to have you on because finally I get somebody on that's a little bit older than me.
Well, I was my ears were peeled. I was listening for you to say something nice, and here you are. Older than you.
Well, I gave you the moniker. You're the legendary Pete Jenkins, but I had to, you know. But listen, Coach, I'm catching up every day about that age-wise. I'll be honest with you, man. I got some parts on me that ain't feeling too good today, especially that right
knee. I'm telling you. But that's got no Mother Nature never loses, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah, it's like speed. Never had a bad day. Well, Mother Nature always had a bad day when you get older.
Yeah.
Coach, you and I talked about this a little bit this morning, text-wise, and it's the first time I've done this 40 years in the draft process. I've never had 24 of my top 75 guys, defensive linemen, either ends or tackle. And I see these super talented athletes that can move unbelievably, but they lost like a pecan. Other than a few of them, if they don't beat a guy with an initial move, Coach, they seemingly lost on where to go, where to track the ball. Yeah. And you brought up to me that you felt strongly that that position is maybe – not coached as well as any other spot on the team today at the high school, college, and pro level.
Yeah, I do. I do. And I don't mean to sound – I don't know what the word I'm – sorry. I'm not trying to sound cocky or anything, Mike, because it's where I work my whole life. But as I watch and travel around and I watch TV and – whatever. It's just a poorly coached position. Are you there, Mike, still?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Coach. Okay. And I think what happens in pro ball, most of the coaches, and true in college for a big part, most of the coaches are offensive guys, and they hire people who can handle the room and keep the guys in line and, you know, stay on top of them and manage them and things like that. And I don't think there's not a lot of head coaches that put a real high priority on the defensive line. Consequently, I just think it's a position that's really undercoached, to be honest with you. Now, a lot of great athletes and a lot of guys, and they go to the league. And then they don't get fundamentals. They have actually created a job for me. You know, that's what I do in July. They've really created. I have 25 pro guys or more. I have to hold it down because of numbers. But I have guys that come to me and pay my fee to learn fundamentals. And you know, there's a few of them, Mike, that do a really good job, but there's a very few, to be honest with you. And when I said that to you, I, again, I don't mean to sound cocky. I just don't think it's a position that they place the importance that it deserves, to be honest with you. Now, hush, because I don't want to sound too cocky or anything.
I got you. No, it's about value, and I think you bring up a great point, Coach. One of the guys that you got to coach and mentoring in your travels at Georgia was Mykel Williams, and I know you didn't work with the linebackers. Jalen Walker was there, but you did work a lot with Mykel. And Mykel, man, he looks the part, and he's one of the few guys in this draft class. You could tell he knows technique work really well. Your thoughts on him as a player?
Yeah, and Mike, listen, if you go to Georgia, you're going to get you some fundamentals. Okay? It's like Alabama used to be. You're going to get you some fundamentals. Because they do – I was over there, 2 weeks ago. Boy, they do such a good job of developing players over there. And you know, case in point, there's Philadelphia with a great defense. Two of the starting three defensive linemen are Georgia kids. There's two or three linebackers on that Philadelphia team that are Georgia kids. I mean, they teach those kids at Georgia. I mean, they teach them a lot. But they teach those kids how to fundamentally play football. Now, Mykel, and here's the thing, Mike. In their terminology at Georgia, the way they do things, they have a big end and a small end. They call him the big end. They call the other one a linebacker. Okay, so Mykel has been in the room with me for the last 4 years, all right? And I am so prejudiced toward this guy because he is high character. He is a really good leader guy. I mean, I watched him grow up. I remember when he walked in that room as a freshman. He's from Columbus, Georgia, Mike. You'll like this story. He's from Columbus, Georgia. That's where I coached high school football. And I was at a high school called Baker High School, which no longer exists. But he was at a school, Hardaway, okay? And I started teasing him when I first met him. I said, hey, Hardaway, man. I said, look, when we played them that week, I sent the B team over there to whip their ass. I said, you know, we didn't even send the varsity. And look, when I saw him 4 years later this year, first thing I said to him, I said, Hardaway. And he said, Coach, there you go again with that same stuff. He said, send in the B team over there. But I like the guy. The first time I saw him line up at a six technique on the tight end, I looked at Trey Scott, the D-line coach, and I said, man, you got you something here. But along with his physical ability, and I had a pro coach tell me today he had a great workout this week for somebody. It was two or three teams worked him out this week, and he ran really good. The guy told me that it was just a really great workout this week. So to me, he'd be a high priority in my book because he has physical attributes, and he's a tremendous kid. He's a special guy, to tell you the truth, and very dependable. And got all of those things. I mean, he's a guy. I'll be honest with you.
He could also play the run, Coach. He got a lot of these guys. Man, that thing is, man, I'm getting into the backfield to try to sack the quarterback. And the first thing they do, they run the football right at him. He's 5 yards up the field, and the running back is also 5 yards up the field.
Yeah, really good. Really good. They play him at a six on the tight end. And then they play him in a four high on the tackle. And I'm telling you, Mike, he holds up, man. He holds up. He looks more like a six, but they put him in there on the tackle, play a four high, and he's very physical. I mean, you know, I think he's going to make somebody a real, really fine pro football player.
Coach, you were at LSU, and you had to sort of tinker with him, but I'll get your thoughts on Savion Jones. I saw him in high school. And I think when he entered LSU, I don't think he was 220 pounds. Tremendous athlete, really good high school basketball player. And when I first saw him, I told this to Coach O, man, you know, I don't know exactly where you're going to play him, but my goodness, can he run the field for a big man? Now, he's put on some weight now, but your thoughts on him, and I know when you took over – coaching the defensive line. The numbers weren't there. So you didn't get to really work with him so much as an end instead of having to work him at tackle.
Yeah, and I think we hurt his progress a little bit because we were so low on tackles. We moved him inside. You know, I don't think he made the move, Mike. He made the move for us. But you could tell his heart wasn't really in it. And we left him in there just long enough to mess him up, I guess, and then we moved him back out to defensive end. You know, but you couldn't chisel out a better-looking athlete, could you? I mean, he is just spectacular-looking guy. He really is. And a good guy, very quiet. I misread him early on when I first got there, you know, because he's so quiet. I thought he lacked interest, to be honest with you. But I learned his personality. He's just a quiet. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that because that's when you learn is when you're not talking and when you're being quiet. But I think he's got tremendous upside physically. Now, he's got, you know, I would hope wherever he goes, they put him at one spot and leave him. Because I think we've hampered him a little bit in his progress because we needed him here and then we moved him back and moved him back. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of his, though. I think he's got tremendous ability, physical ability.
Coach, you didn't coach him, but you had to go up against him in practice every day. Will Campbell. People don't realize what left LSU. I mean, he's a rare guy as an 18-year-old freshman to step off a high school campus, and I'm the starting left tackle playing against grown men in the SEC. Your thoughts on Will, because I think he's one of those guys where his character, his work ethic, grew up on a farm, you know, in Monroe. There is something about that I think sometimes we overlook. We get caught up, and he is very gifted as an athlete, but we kind of forget a little bit about the intangibles that make Will Campbell such a tremendous player.
Yeah, I agree with you totally, Mike. I think you're exactly right. The first thing that I thought about him as I begin to compete against him, as you say, he's a serious-minded, very mature kid. I mean, look here, there was no play in him. When he came to practice, I'm telling you, he came on that practice field in a bad mood and stayed that way for about 2 hours. and look, I never saw him take it easy on anybody. I mean, every play, he's a real competitive guy. And, you know, I've got to know him, the little I did get to know him, a short period of time I was there, 2023. You know, we would speak and things like that. I had such great admiration for him. He's my kind of guy, boy. I mean, he, when he crossed that white line, he put it in gear and he stayed that way through the whole game and through the whole practice or whatever. But I think he's got a great future, Mike. I think you described his physical attributes exactly right. And I think the competitiveness is going to make him he reminded me a lot of Whitworth, to be honest with you.
Okay.
And that's a big set of shoes I just put in.
You better believe it. That's some big moccasins.
He reminded me, Whitworth was that same way at LSU. I mean, you know, there wasn't no playing around, man. He was damn serious about every snap. And Will reminded me a lot of what I saw with Whitworth when he was at LSU. So I think he'll do well. I would like to have him on my team as well as Michael.
Coach, before we let you run, I wanted to ask you, I talked with you off air about Jordan Birch from Oregon, a South Carolina guy. You know, Mike said that basically a third of the top 75 prospects this year are defensive linemen. And I just asked him, he's probably going to be like a second round pick. Your thoughts on Jordan Birch?
Well, I first met him, he was young in South Carolina when I was hired to work up there. And then one day, you know, I walked in the room and Oregon, and, you know, it's just the way things happen today. I walk in the room in Oregon, and the kid speaks to me, and I'm thinking, well, you know, but it was him. He transferred to Oregon. Well, he's done a really good – I tell you, he's a big kid, and he is very mobile, man. I'm telling you, he can run. He's got – he changed direction. He's got suddenness about him. I think he's a heck of a prospect. And he's done really well out at Oregon, which there's another place now, Mike, where they coach him up out there now. Oregon, I promise you, I didn't go this year to Oregon. I told Dan Lanning, the trip has gotten where it's too much for me. Because Eugene, you know, if you miss a flight out of Eugene, you got to wait about a week for the next one, you know. I told Dan, I said, Dan, last year when I was out there, they picked me up at the hotel at 3 a.m. to catch my flight. And I got back to New Orleans at 7 that night. I was war slick, now I'm telling you. But they do a good job coaching out there, and discipline reigns, and I think they did a good job with Jordan. He was in the D-line room because they had the ends, and both ends were in the room at Oregon. But I think Jordan's a fine prospect, too. I really do.
Coach, you're talking about developing at Oregon. I think about Derek Harmon. Who the hell heard of Derek Harmon at Michigan State? He goes play 1 year. Now, you didn't get a chance because he came in a little bit later than you were there.
He was not there in the spring, Mike. Remember you and I talked about
it? Right. I remember that.
I called out there. They said he came in for 2 days.
And to think, look at Harmon now. People are looking at him as a first-round pick.
And, you know, here's one thing they said to me, though, when I called out there. You and I talked about him, and I called because I was like, how could I miss somebody like that? Anyways, they said, you know, he wasn't here for the spring. He just got here for 2 days. They said, too, you know, that his football IQ is extremely high. The game really makes sense to him. And that enabled him to come in there so late and still contribute like he did to their football team. So, I'm thinking he's a really good prospect. I know a lot of my friends in pro ball that we've had conversations about him, and all of them like him. I mean, they're all high on him. So, that's another good one. I've seen some pretty good ones that we've talked about just recently here.
Coach, thanks so much for joining us. Always appreciate your insights and everything. And, man, before you know it, Louisiana Line Camp coming up in June at Nicholls State in Thibodaux.
I'm working on it every day, Mike.
Thank you, Coach.
All right, my friend. Take care.
Thank you, buddy. Pete Jenkins, the legendary defensive line coach. Man, I think about it. He's coached over 70 all SEC players, over 50 All-Americans, and I think it's 40 All-Pro players in the NFL.
They
got
resume.
A lot of people with that on the resume, Charlie.
Pretty good resume there, Mikey.
That's pretty strong. We'll be back with our Bet 365 triple option feature right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelier along with Steve Geller, Charlie Long. It's our Bet 365 triple option feature. Steven, you first.
Well, guys, a little bit ago we saw on social media news coming out that Easton Stick, the former L.A. Chargers quarterback, has signed with the Atlanta Falcons. A few things are interesting there to me. One, I thought Stick might have been a veteran QB that the Saints could potentially target since Kellen Moore had experience as offensive coordinator with the Chargers over there and knows, you know, Easton Stick pretty well. The other one was the Falcons adding another veteran quarterback when you still got Kirk Cousins on the roster. There's been all kinds of rumors and speculation about if Cousins will end up getting traded or will the Falcons end up having to just outright release him. I'm curious if, obviously, he's released. I think the Saints would be a team that could be involved in picking up a guy like Kirk Cousins. As for a trade, though, I don't see the Saints in the market there making a move for him in that front. But, some other teams out there that could have some, you know, Cousins interest would be the Pittsburgh Steelers. You got to wonder, would the Minnesota Vikings have any interest in bringing him back. And all of a sudden, too, the Cleveland Browns, I think, could still be in market for a quarterback. So some things unsettled with some veteran QBs out there. I'm curious to see how that ends up shaking out before or after the NFL draft.
The Kirk Cousins situation is sort of odd because you can see that the Falcons are trying to trade him away. My thing is, I'm not picking up that contract.
Right.
I'm not doing it. Sorry. If somebody's willing to give you something for him, fine. But I want to do my own deal with Kirk. The Pandora box is for Atlanta. If we go to June 2nd and say, let's cut him loose. We're not getting anything for him. Let's move on and give him. Man, he could potentially sign with a rival that you got to play him twice a year.
Right.
You know, again, because there's no clear-cut deal here. And Kirk's is like Derek Carr. He already got his money. No matter what, he got his cash already. It's similar to when Russell Wilson signed with the Steelers, that wasn't a huge money deal with Pittsburgh because he had already got his cash from the Broncos. Man, it opens up a Pandora box if you cut him on where he could potentially end up. And what you brought up, I think, is correct. Pittsburgh, Cleveland. And if I'm the Saints, I got to look in that direction too.
I agree totally, Mike. And you know, the veteran QB market out there right now is very slim pickings.
Yeah, real thin. Charlie?
Guys, I'm going with Peter Schrager, formerly of the Good Morning Football, now with ESPN. He had posted on his social media page earlier today, the two guys who have won the interview process and are universally beloved as people in addition to their playing ability, number one, Jalen Walker, the Georgia linebacker that Mike, you and I have talked a ton about, and number two, Emeka Ibuka, the Ohio State wide receiver. And like we kind of said earlier this hour, whenever you're not hearing much about one of these top first-round prospects, it's because nobody wants to really reveal their hand and that everybody loves them. Well, Peter Schrager just kind of revealed there, Jalen Walker and Emeka Ibuka, two of the most beloved prospects at the top of this class. The question is, Jalen Walker, where does he end up in the top 10? It's not even like a question of if he's going to be a top 10 pick. Does he go to Jacksonville at 5? Does he go to Las Vegas at 6? Does he go to Carolina at 8? Does he go to the Saints at 9? All of these different places could be a spot for him. And that's why I said that he's kind of like the wild card player in this draft, is that we don't know exactly where he's going to end up. I will say this about Ibuka, is that once you get past pick 20-ish, it gets a little bit more difficult to kind of determine where these players are going to be going. Because as you've talked about as well, Mike, with this year's draft, there's kind of the gap between the top prospects, and then from basically 20 to like 50, there's not much separation. So Ibuka is going to be in that number. He's going to be very early in that number, but it's also going to be interesting to see which team he goes to, because he'll instantly make any wide receiver room better.
There's a third one too I'll add to Peter's list, and that's Tyler Booker, the offensive guard from Alabama. Now, you know where he's going to play. He's going to be a guard in the NFL. But you talk about high character, tough guy, a leader. And, man, he's like a $16 cab ride to get around. I mean, he's a big dude. He is a wide load. But every time I have talked to people that have interviewed him, they have brought him up in that same manner as Walker and Ibuka. That, wow. Okay, he's a character guy. Football matters to him. And just watch his play on the field. Man, he is a crackerjack run blocker, and he's got much better as a pass protector. Charlie brought up about, and we've talked about it so many times here, but when you don't hear something about a player, there is something there about, I'm not telling nobody. One of those guys, too, Travion Henderson from Ohio State. You've heard much more about Quinshon Judkins, his kind of battering ram roommate, so to speak, at Ohio State. We've heard a lot about Ashton Jeanty, a lot about Omarion Hampton. But the speedster, Travion Henderson, don't be surprised late in round one, and especially one team, think of what the Washington Commanders could be if they had that guy in the backfield with Jaden Daniels running it and catching the ball. They become what they call dynamic. And I think maybe some people are looking at him a little bit like Jahmyr Gibbs,
Mike,
coming out of Alabama.
Travion Henderson's such a fun prospect because he's a home run hit waiting to happen every time he touches the ball. But the toughness of him as a player, too. I know we've brought this up as before as well when talking about some of the top prospects in this draft class. He is so good in pass pro, Mike.
Yes, he is.
He'll just have like these snaps where he's just decleating a blitzer. And like, he's not the biggest dude in the world. It's the effort there that you love to see from someone like Trevion Henderson. You know, it'll be interesting to see the order of the top running backs and which way they go. Obviously, Gentry's going to be number one. But if Hampton becomes number two, Trevion Henderson is going to be in that number two, maybe becoming the number two running back in this class. But man, I love him as a prospect. He could definitely be a first round pick.
Yeah, and you know, he doesn't have a lot of threat off the tires because he's had to kind of
split backfield,
split it with another guy throughout his career at Ohio State. That's it for our Bet 365 triple option feature. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 878, Charlie told me that Big Cheesy wanted me to comment on Jared Wilson, the center from Georgia. He's actually my number two rated center. I've got him as a late second round pick. You know, he waited for 3 years. Von Prahn from New Orleans was the guy for 3 years, takes over last year. Tremendous job. Excellent pass protector, really good run blocker. Late in round two for Jared Wilson from Georgia. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this news break.
What's going on, everybody? It is Monday, April 21st, and it is officially, finally, draft week. We are counting down till Thursday night when it's round one of the NFL draft. It seems like every year, Charlie, we've been talking about this forever.
So I had it on ESPN in the studio here, Steve, and they have like a 70-something hour countdown, which is awesome.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was having lunch with my kiddo today because he's off from school, still on break.
Yeah.
And he goes to me, "Oh, Dad, look, 70 days to the draft." And I'm like, 70 days?
No,
that's hours, buddy.
Yeah. No, it's closer to 70 days for the NBA draft. But for the NFL draft, yeah, it's like a 70-something hour countdown at this point. And the clock is ticking, man. We're almost there.
Yeah, the speculation season finally will come to head on Thursday. Black and gold currently hold that ninth overall pick. There's been already speculation that this team trying to maneuver either back into the first round or higher up into the second. That's no surprise. I don't think that's any kind of breaking news with this Saints squad. We've seen them over the years be very aggressive in the draft. When they target something that they like, they're going to go after it. So curious to find out how Coach Kellen Moore and the rest of his staff, you know, handle this draft. It's a whole new regime on Airline Drive taking care of things. There's some other, you know, familiar pieces in place, but I would think that, you know, we're really going to get a sense of this being a stamp on the start of a Kellen Moore era.
Yeah, so Mickey doesn't trade down. That's the whole thing. Like, that's his shtick. He only trades up. So if the Saints are comfortable, which they should be at pick 9, not having to move up from 9 to get into the top 5 or anything like that, if they're comfortable at pick 9, then expect them to stay put, right? And however, the other report from Adam Schefter today from ESPN was that they're trying to move up from 40 potentially. Like, they're taking calls, they're doing their due diligence, and as you mentioned, the start of the Kellen Moore era, if there's a quarterback that he likes at the top of the second round, or maybe at the back end of the first round, that's what you could potentially see the Saints trading up from pick 40 with, and they have a little bit of ammunition to potentially do so. You know, we mentioned we would love to see them use that second, third round pick or that second, fourth round pick. But I mean, by the end of this week, it could be potentially packaged up to get up and get that quarterback, which I wouldn't be surprised.
You mentioned either moving into the first round or up in the second, a quarterback that could be on the Black and Gold's radar has been talked about a little bit is Ole Miss's Jackson Dart. Yep. Obviously, we've heard a ton about, you know, their potential of Shadur at number 9. But I think a lot of folks have maybe cooled off on that for the Saints, picking Shadur Sanders with the 9th overall selection. Obviously, we're just a couple days away where we'll finally find out, but there seems to be more back into that camp of the team and whoever is in the room making those decisions is a bit more enamored with the Ole Miss QB and could potentially make that number 9 selection, best player available, and then move back into the first round or higher in the second to grab a guy like Jackson Dart.
So in Mike's latest mock draft, which is on WWL.com, if anyone wants to go check it out, go take a look at it there. He has the 32nd overall pick being Jackson Dart. So one of the teams, whether that's Cleveland,
giving Philly a call,
whether that's Cleveland at 33, I think New York is at 34 or 35. Like at the very start of the second round, the Saints are at pick 40. One of those teams is going to potentially call at the back end of the first round. in Mike's draft or in Mike's mock here, he has the Eagles being that team trading back from pick 32 so a team can move up and get Jackson Dart and have the fifth year option for him. So I could see that happening easily. And if it's not Philly, it might be slightly earlier than that. It depends on how the draft board falls, obviously. But yeah, Jackson Dart being a potential late first round pick, it's going to be interesting to see because that's the buzz right now. But there's also, you know, Jalen Milroe that we've talked a little bit about too, and his comp to someone like Jalen Hurts, who Kellen Moore just got done working with. So we'll see. It's going to be one of these guys that may not necessarily be, or you may not necessarily have a first round grade on them. You might have a second round grade on them, but you got to move up and make sure you snag them either at the back end of the first round or very early in the second.
The idea of moving back into the first or potentially higher in the second round, definitely a lot more appealing to me than using a ninth overall selection on a QB. We've talked about that fact is a ton.
I'm so anti-trading with Philly, though. Howie Roseman just seems to cook every single person that he trades with.
The Saints have a history, you know, dealing with the Philadelphia, though.
Jalen Carter's chilling with the Eagles now, too, Steve. But listen, like, kind of like you're saying, I'm right there with you. I was never really a fan of potentially reaching for a quarterback at pick 9. And that's the buzz that's been coming out. And I know it's smokescreen season, so this could all be just, you know, nonsense by the time we're talking on Thursday. But the smokescreen season, regardless of all that, is that the Saints are targeting best player available at pick 9. I think Shefty even used the words, you know, defensive line prospect, someone up front. So we'll see what happens there. But if one of those top guys like a Tyler Warren or Will Campbell falls, you heard, you know, my Sports Flash here with Jen Hale's comments that they would be better value at pick 9 than reaching for someone like Shadur, Dart, or whoever else with the ninth overall selection.
Yeah, that ninth overall pick, which been more and more and more appealing to me, is the idea of selecting, if he's available, the tight end out of Penn State and Tyler Warren, just to give, you know, new offensive mind and genius, as he's called here, Kellen Moore, an interesting new piece for this offense that isn't just a tight end, can be used all over the place, a la Taysom Hill as a Swiss Army knife.
Right, and Tyler Warren's great. Like Mike had mentioned, he's an improvement, an instant upgrade to your passing game.
That's going
to
help day one.
And your rushing game.
Yes.
And it's not just him as a run blocker, which he's good at too, but it's also him and how Penn State used him. He was their entire offense last year.
Right.
Like, people can go back and watch. Penn State had no production from their wide receivers. It was their two running backs, and it was Tyler Warren. And that's what they ran their offense through. And they made it all the way to the Final Four of the college football season. Tyler Warren was that good. He was the best tight end in college football. There's a reason that he's going to be a top 10-ish pick this year. And but this is kind of the interesting buzz as well, that Colson Loveland could be like right behind him.
I saw
the
that,
Michigan
right?
tight end. And while he didn't have as big of numbers as someone like Tyler Warren did, he also didn't have a guy that could throw a forward pass with the Wolverine offense this past year. So, you know, I think he's an intriguing prospect as well. I'm taking Tyler Warren over him, obviously, but it's like the 1-2. And then the question mark becomes, does Mason Taylor from LSU get into the first round?
Right.
And Daniel Jeremiah held his media kind of Zoom call recently, and he mentioned that people just view Mason Taylor as such a safe bet to be a double-digit career type of player. Someone that's going to be a tight end in the NFL for like 10 years. He's going to be a great pass catcher from day one. And he's someone that can still develop into a solid NFL player. So it's a good tight end class. Let's put it that way. And we had someone that texted in just, you know, the Juwan Johnson situation and how the Saints re-signed him. That's not stopping me from taking Tyler Warren at pick 9. I'm going to be honest with you. Like,
no, I'm more welcome Tyler Warren to, you know, line up in those dual tight end sets with Juwan Johnson, please.
Right. So Tyler Warren, you know, Colson Loveland, and potentially Mason Taylor, all first-round picks. So if you're going to really address the tight end position this year, early on in the draft, you're probably going to have to do it with Tyler Warren at 9, if he's there.
Right.
Because otherwise, if you're sitting at 40, and we talked about trading up for a quarterback with that 40th overall pick, but if you were looking at potentially getting a tight end in the second round, you know, Elijah Arroyo is probably going to be there, but he might be also a late second round, maybe early third round pick potentially, and it might be a reach to take him at 40. So
there's been some mocks I've seen that have like the Jets, I think, at number 7 grabbing Warren. So that could be end up being like a snake bit, you know.
Correct. And at that point, maybe you don't address the tight end position.
Right.
At least at this year's draft. Or maybe you do it with one of your two third round picks.
But if Warren's there.
But if Warren is there, listen, I've been pounding the table for him for quite some time.
You've been pounding the table for a tight end for a couple of drafts now.
Well, I was pounding it 2 years ago when it was the best tight end class that Mike Dettillier had ever evaluated in his many years of scouting, and they did not address it that year. But this year, you know, Tyler Warren is fantastic. Colson Loveland's going to be a very intriguing prospect that's going to go. I can't see him falling past 20, Steve, if he's there. I think he might go to the Colts at pick 14.
Saw that, yeah.
Especially if Warren goes in the top 10. Because the Colts' dream scenario is getting Tyler Warren at pick 14. But if Warren goes in the top 10, kind of like we're anticipating, then they could probably take Colson Loveland at pick 14. And then at the back end of the first round, Mason Taylor potentially sneaking in there too.
Plenty of draft talk still to come, gearing up for the big night on Thursday. LSU baseball over the weekend, taking 2-3 from Alabama. A little bit disappointing they didn't end up taking the series finale, but the Tigers taking 2 of 3 games against Bama, getting the big series win. We're going to talk about that, break it all down when we get back with Big Ben, Ben McDonald, the ESPN and SEC Network college baseball analyst, right here on WWL. Also going to give you the code word of the day for your second weekend of Jazz Fest tickets. Hopefully the weather is gorgeous outside. It rain gets by us and ends up clearing up for all you Jazz Festers. Going to take a break. Be back with more sports talk right after this. Stay tuned on WWL. Welcome back into sports talk, breaking down LSU baseball's weekend of a 2-1 series victory over Alabama, helping us do that. The great Ben McDonald, ESPN SEC Network college baseball analyst, joining us. Ben, how you been doing? How was your weekend at the box?
It was good, man. I tell you what, did 4 games, and, McNeese has a really good team. You know, they were ranked, 26th in the RPI on Tuesday night, and LSU knocked them off. And then, of course, Alabama's a ranked team and a solid team and won 2 out of 3. So, all in all, look, pretty solid weekend, fellas. You went 3 out of 4 against that kind of competition.
When you look at the 3 games against Bama, Jay Johnson's always has talked about it now that he considers all these weekends in SEC play just basically super regional action. Wondering what you saw from the Tide that gave the Tigers some problems.
Well, you know, Alabama has a really solid team. I mean, Justin LeBron, their shortstop, sophomore shortstop, didn't have a great series. LSU pitched him really good. But, you know, when you talk about talent, he's projected to be the first pick in the MLB draft. Not in this year's draft, but in next summer's draft, the 26th draft, you know. So he's got a big-time upside. LSU pitched him really well. But, you know, I think the arms for Alabama are solid. Typically their defense is really good. They made a few errors here and there. And they got enough of an offense. I mean, I look at their overall offensive numbers, and all the numbers are pretty average, but what they do best is hit the ball out of the ballpark. They have the 5th most home runs in the SEC. So when you can bang it out of the ballpark like Bama can, they're always a threat to come back. And so it's a very, very solid team that Alabama has. And, you know, they dropped – this is their 3rd series in a row they dropped, but yet they're still ranked to what people think about them. I mean, they're on a new poll today. They're ranked 18th in the country, you know. So it's a good team. It's a solid team.
And the SEC is kind of cannibalizing itself a little bit here, Ben. Like, Texas is the only one that's really kind of gone unscathed throughout the first 6 weeks now of SEC action. Like, with Arkansas losing a recent weekend series, they dropped to number 5. Tennessee drops 2 of 3 to Kentucky. That's LSU's next opponent. I want to get your thoughts on the Volunteers here and kind of get an early preview of Tennessee this weekend coming to the box. Liam Doyle, listen, he put up video game numbers in non-conference play, and he's kind of come a little bit back down to earth. But the numbers on the season are just so, so impressive. 7-1 this season, a 2.48 ERA, a 0.83 whip, walks and hits per innings pitch, 31 hits allowed to 104 strikeouts in 58 innings pitch. What have you seen from the left-handed pitcher so far this year, the Tennessee Volunteers ace?
Yeah, when I talk about Tennessee, I mean, Tennessee is different, right? I mean, if you go back and look at the last three national champions, Ole Miss won it, 3 years ago. They kind of go off the grid for the last 2 years. Don't even make the SEC tournament. Mississippi State won it the year before Ole Miss won it, and yet the next 2 years, they didn't even make the SEC tournament, much less the NCAA tournament. Well, Tennessee won their first national title last year. Everybody thought there'd be a little bit of a dip, and I tell you what, they've not dipped a whole lot. They're still really, really good. The portal was good. They go over to Ole Miss, and they get Doyle, who you're talking about, who was in the weekend rotation for Ole Miss last year. They get Fisher, the first baseman, who was one of the top hitters in the league, and he transferred over to Tennessee, too. So Tony Vitale didn't miss a beat at all. And when I look at Liam Doyle, you know, it's obviously from the left side. It's high velocity. And what he does best, he's got a lot of analytics. He pitches up in the strike zone and above, actually, the top of the strike zone. And hitters just have a hard time not chasing that fastball out of the zone. Because if you look at his in-zone success and when he gets the ball in the strike zone, he can get hittable at that point. But what he does best is throws the ball out of the strike zone, and yet he gets a lot of swings on it, you know. And so I think he hides the ball very well. If you talk to hitters, they say they don't pick up the fastball, just kind of jumps on you, and it kind of explodes through the zone, you know. And so he's a really good college pitcher. I got him projected, actually, at the next level to be a reliever because he doesn't throw enough strikes for me. And when LSU faces him, they're going to have to push the ball down in the strike zone because if they chase that elevated fastball, mid-90s fastball, nobody's had success and nobody's going to have success on that fastball up out of the zone. So they got to figure out a way to push him down in the strike zone and make him be over the white part of the plate.
Ben, talking about pitching, it seems like LSU kind of has a question now for that third starter on the weekend. We saw Chase Shores in that final game against Alabama really struggling, only going 2 2/3 innings, giving up three earned runs in that matchup. But overall, what do you think the Tigers end up turning to on their third part of the weekend rotation?
Yeah, I mean, that is a little bit of a question mark for LSU. I'm not sure what Jay Johnson's going to do. You know, he started Connor Ware, on Saturday in game three, and, you know, Connor Ware gave him 2+ innings. So he tried somebody different, and then Chase Shores was the first reliever in, you know, and of course, Chase Shores was relieving a little bit his freshman year as well. I still like Shores, and people are down on him a little bit. But I tell you what you got to remember about Chase Shores, he only threw 18 innings his freshman year, and then he hurt his elbow. He missed the rest of his freshman year 2 years ago, didn't pitch at all last year, and just now came back. So you talk about a young man that started his third year, only had 18 collegiate innings under his belt. And now he's pitched, he's got about 59 total in his 3 years at LSU. So in a lot of ways, he's still learning how to pitch. You think of him as a junior, but really from an experience standpoint, he's still just a freshman. So that 6'8" frame, man, he struggles to throw strikes sometimes. He gets behind the count a little bit, but you can't deny the stuff. Like, it's a mid to upper 90s fastball. He was up to 99 the other day. And so he's got a really good arm. I think it's just about kind of zeroing that scope in a little bit more, if you will, and getting the ball over the white part of the plate. Because when he throws strikes, he's a really good pitcher. So I don't know if this was kind of a reset for Shores to kind of grab his attention a little bit, try somebody else, and then throw him back in there. But I have a feeling Shores is going to be back in there. I am overall, though, guys, I'm impressed with this LSU pitching staff. It led the nation in strikeouts last year. It leads the SEC this year in strikeouts. It's number 2 in the entire country this year in strikeouts, only behind Wake Forest. And you got to go all the way back to 2015 when LSU had an ERA this low on the season. If you look at LSU's ERA, it's 3rd overall in the SEC. And in SEC play alone, it is the number 2 best ERA in the SEC. And that's the best top conference out there. So overall, Nate Yeske has done an outstanding job with this staff. Like I said, it's the best ERA right now since 2015. And that is a mouthful.
And, you know, a big reason for that is the two-headed monster that LSU features kind of out of the bullpen with Cason Evans, the freshman, and then Zach Howen, the transfer from Wofford. Ben, I think it's been a while since we've talked to you. Like, these two guys have been unbelievable this year. And Jay Johnson, in the high leverage moments, he always wants to go to one of those two players to kind of secure a weekend series victory. Now, the issue with the sweep at Auburn was that LSU was never in the lead. But when you're in the lead on any, no matter who the SEC opponent is, and you have Cason Evans or Zach Howen that you can go to, and it would happen this past weekend, once they picked up the lead in that Thursday game, Cason Evans comes out and he's shut down. He's fantastic. I know that people will talk about the low strikeout, but I think it was a makeup call for the batter before that. So anyways, and then yeah. Zach Howen on Friday to secure, you know, that second series, or the second win in the series and secure the series victory. Those two guys have been so unbelievable this year. I just want to get your thoughts on them.
Yeah, I tell you what, to rely on a true freshman is very rare in high leverage situations, you know, at the back end of a bullpen. And, you talk about Evans and Cason. Cason's been outstanding. I mean, it's a .67 ERA. He throws a lot of strikes. He fills up the zone. It's high velocity, you know. And then, of course, when you talk about Zach Cowan, he was a starter at Wofford last year. And really, I mean, nobody's talking about this, but if Gavin Guidry was healthy and at the back end of that bullpen, I think he would be Evans back there and Guidry back there. And I think you'd see the kid out of Watford, Zach Cowan. I think he would be your number three starter. I really do. But I think Jay likes Cowan at the back end because he doesn't have Guidry and he wants to rely on Cowan and Evans. And what I love about those guys, it's not just one inning, right? When he brings them in, they can finish ball games. They can go three for you. They can give you three plus, or they can give you one if that's what you want. So that's the value of having those guys back there. Cowan's got this changeup, man, and everybody knows he's going to throw it, and yet they still can't hit it. You know, it's that good. And so he brings a lot to the table. He brings some experience, and it really his first year to relieve, and he's been outstanding. And I am super impressed with Evans, you know, as a true freshman, his demeanor on the mound. He's got a slow heartbeat. And so, look, the back end of this bullpen is going to be really, really good. I think they need another guy or two to step up. I think Maverick Rizzi, the other freshman, the 6'9" guy, I think he's going to be a big part of that. And if they get Rizzi going along with Evans and, of course, Cowan back there, it's going to be a three-headed monster back there. And LSU is going to be really tough if they can carry a lead into the seventh inning.
Ben, always great hearing you call LSU baseball games and always appreciate you stopping by WWL Radio. Thanks a lot for the time, Big Ben.
Anytime, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Ben.
Ben McDonald, ESPN and SEC Network college baseball analyst, joining us there, breaking down the Bayou Bengals series win over Bama over the weekend. Now they got a matchup against Northwestern State tomorrow, and then back to Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they'll be taking on good old Tennessee.
So, Steve, I was kind of joking with Ben before he came on there. The SEC is wild. I mean, it's just unbelievable, isn't it? South Carolina takes a series from what was then top 10 ranked Ole Miss. They went from being like 2-13 in SEC play to now 4-14, and Ole Miss drops to 10-8 in SEC play. Texas A&M is just on a heater right now.
Yeah.
Rising from the ashes like a phoenix. I mean, it's been unbelievable watching how they've played in recent weeks, taking down a series from Tennessee and then taking 2-3 at Arkansas, who was the number two team in the country. Like I kind of mentioned with Ben there, like the SEC is cannibalizing itself a little bit here because Tennessee drops 2-3 at home to Kentucky, who was in the middle of the pack. It's just all these teams are beating up on one another. And when you look at the current D1 baseball top 25, there's only one SEC team in the top four, and it's because Arkansas and Tennessee have dropped 2-3 to at home to what was then, you know, A&M and Kentucky in the middle of the pack in the SEC. But you have LSU and Tennessee this upcoming weekend. Georgia loses three straight at Vanderbilt this past weekend. They were a top five team entering the weekend. So it's been crazy to follow. The one constant is that Missouri stinks, and they're at the bottom of the SEC.
Oh, wah, wah.
I feel bad,
Mizzou.
But it's, I mean, they're getting bludgeoned every time they play. The one constant's them at the bottom of the pack, but all these other teams kind of in the middle to like the lower tier are beating up on each other.
How is Mizzou winless in conference play?
They're just not very good. But you see a team like South Carolina take 2-3 from Ole Miss.
Yeah.
You see Texas A&M go to Fayetteville, take 2-3 from Arkansas. You saw Kentucky go to Tennessee and take 2-3 from the Volunteers. It's so chaotic. And Georgia getting swept at Vanderbilt. We don't really know what's going to happen or how the SEC standings are going to shape up. The one constant so far has been Texas, and they're the one team that really hasn't fallen off the track. And Jim Schlossnagel's been doing a great job there early on, but they haven't played a really tough road series yet. And they have a hot Texas A&M team coming to town this upcoming weekend. And boy, oh boy, is that going to be appointment viewing for college baseball fans.
All right, folks, who's ready to party? Now's your chance to win a pair of tickets to the second weekend of Jazz Fest. Today's password is Heritage. That's Heritage, HERITAGE. Now just go to WWL.com/contest and register to win. It's that easy. Don't miss your chance. All you have to do is listen at 9 a.m., noon, 3 p.m., and then 6 p.m. for the Jazz Fest code word of the day to see amazing artists like Pearl Jam, Luke Combs, Lenny Kravitz, Cage the Elephant, Santana, Patti LaBelle, Trombone Shorty, and so much more. Good luck and happy festing, folks, from Miller Lite, the official beer of Jazz Fest, and your favorite, WWL. Taking a break here on Sports Talk as we get ready for the NFL draft on Thursday. Coming back with more right after this. Welcome back into Sports Talk. This Monday. We are just a couple, just 3 days away from the NFL draft. It's hard to believe we're finally here, folks.
I know. It's exciting. We've been talking about it for months, and now we finally get to see where some of these top prospects land.
I will say, Charlie, it's kind of sad right now. NBA playoffs going on, but we don't really have any dog in the fight.
Yeah. You know, I just want to see good games. And we saw a few of them on Saturday.
It was fun seeing the Lakers.
We did not see as many down on Sunday. Oh, my goodness. And so, but if you look at, like, the slate and how the NBA scheduled it, he kind of anticipated the better games were going to be on that Saturday.
Right.
Versus the Sunday matchups where they have the 1v8s and the 2v7s on the same day. And it's going to change up, like, the scheduling is kind of weird with the NBA, this playoff first round matchups. And the Saturday games were fun, though, Steve. I had a good time, specifically with the Nuggets and Clippers game was awesome. Like, that first matchup, I know that a lot of folks, myself included, kind of favored the Clippers against the Nuggets, given that they had just fired their head coach basically a week before the start of the postseason, and that they've, you know, not necessarily been slumping, but, you know, the Clippers have kind of been surging late, and they looked great in their season finale against Golden State, which helped them get that 5 seed. I'm kind of still on the Clippers bandwagon a little bit. I think that they can still win that series, but tonight's matchup is obviously huge. The Knicks and Pistons game one was really interesting because
that's going on right now. That second game,
yeah, game two. Actually, I don't have that up. I'm gonna take a look at that in just a second.
It's currently Pistons 17-16 right now. Early on, obviously,
the Pistons were in good position to win that game, and then the Knicks go on a 21-0 run in the fourth quarter, and during that stretch, the Pistons crumbled like a house of cards. And it showed a little bit of youth, I think, right, with Cade Cunningham and Jalen Duren. And, you know, this is like these guys' first real shot at it. Ausar Thompson. The Knicks have been here before. They haven't made, like, a deep run to, you know, the conference finals or the NBA finals for that matter. But they've been in situations like this and
right.
in playoff basketball. And at Madison Square Garden, it felt like the young Pistons got a little bit rattled in that 21-0 stretch, and that ended up booking, you know, the Knicks for that game one victory. I still think it's going to be a fun series. You know, like, Cade Cunningham's going to have one of these nights where he drops 35, 40 points and the Pistons are going to pick up a win. I think it's like a 4-2 for New York, but that was a fun matchup on Saturday, Steve. As I mentioned, the Clippers Nuggets was good. I loved seeing the Lakers get just blasted.
Luka showed up, but nobody else did on the Lakers.
Naz Reid, former LSU Tiger. Listen, man, every time he catches the ball, he's got such a quick release from three-point range for a guy that's like 7 feet tall. And it's a pretty shot, too. He's awesome. And then Jaden McDaniels was great. Anthony Edwards didn't play his best game, but they still blew out the Lakers. Now
A lot of folks
are kind of starting to rethink that series a little bit. That, oh, well, you know, people just kind of expected the Lakers to move on. And
for sure,
Luka would own, you know, the Timberwolves again, just like he did last year in the conference finals. Maybe not so fast.
Yeah, that to me was the highlight of Saturday, just because I begrudgingly, you know, expected the Lakers to have an easy go against the T-Wolves, honestly, and was worried what the Lake Show might do in these playoffs, considering the team up of Luka and LeBron. But was so surprised that Doncic was the only one, like I said, that showed up. It's only game one, but still, to have that game in Los Angeles and the Lakers get routed was pretty eye-opening.
Steve, did you fill out a bracket?
I have not filled out an NBA bracket, sorry.
I did. I had the Thunder in 5 over the Grizzlies. I don't think that even gets to 5 at this point. That first game was so embarrassing for Memphis. And it, you know, listen, this is going to be a sweep. Just get it over with. I had the Clippers in 7 against the Nuggets. I still feel pretty good about that. I had the Lakers in 6 against the Timberwolves, and I no longer feel very good about that. let's see. I had the Warriors in 6 against the Rockets. That was the one game that was pretty fun last night because Houston got down early. They kind of came back a little bit. That's also like this young team versus this old guard squad. Houston's the young guns. Obviously, the Warriors are trying to make one last run with Steph Curry and Jimmy Butler. I had the Cavaliers in 6 in their first round matchup. I don't think that's going to go to 6 either against the Heat. It might be like a 5 or a 4. We'll see what happens
the
there.
Gentlemen's sweep.
Right. The Pacers in 6 over the Bucks. That's looking good. The Knicks in 6 over the Pistons. And I had the Celtics in 5 over Orlando. So I'm feeling pretty good about my picks, except for the Lakers. That's the one that I'm a little bit nervous about.
Yeah, right now we've got the Detroit Pistons up 21-18 over the Knicks. The first quarter winding down over there. And then the late game tonight, game two between the Nuggets and Clippers will be must-see TV for sure.
Given how that game one went, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's two very evenly matched teams. And now when you get to go play OKC in round two, whichever winner kind of gets out of the slugfest between LA and Denver, Good luck against OKC.
Taking a break. When we get back, I'll give you that code word of the day again for your Jazz Fest tickets second weekend. So stay tuned right after this on WWL. All right, who's ready to party? Now's your chance to win a pair of tickets again to the second weekend of Jazz Fest. Today's password is heritage. That's heritage, H-E-R-I-T-A-G-E. Now just go to WWL.com/contest and register to win. It's that easy. Do not miss your chance. All you have to do is listen every day, 9 a.m., noon, 3 p.m., and 6 p.m. for the Jazz Fest code word of the day. You can see amazing artists like Pearl Jam, Lenny Kravitz, Cage the Elephant, Santana, Patti LaBelle, Trombone Shorty, and more. Good luck and happy festing, folks, from Miller Lite, the official beer of Jazz Fest and WWL. Coming up on tomorrow's show of Sports Talk, we're going to recap what Pelicans Executive Vice President of Basketball Operations Joe Dumars had to say in his introductory press conference. Anxious to hear some of his plans to push the Pel back to becoming a consistent playoff contender. Plus, want to know, which QB do you want the Saints to draft? Who's the best fit for new head coach Kellen Moore? And then at 6:30, it'll be LSU baseball versus Northwestern State on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Now coming up on WWL, we've got the Jay Johnson Show recapping the Tigers' series win against Bama. Talk to you later, folks. Have a great night.